Think about your favorite gadget, maybe, or even just that coffee mug you always seem to reach for. What makes it special? It's rarely just about what it does, right? More often, it's about how it makes you, well, feel. Today, we're going to pull back the curtain a bit on emotional design, how products are intentionally shaping our feelings, and why that emotional connection is maybe far more powerful than we realize. We're drawing on insights from pioneers like Don Norman and also some cutting-edge stuff from experts like Jay Yoon and Peter Desmet. Okay, so let's unpack this. A classic starting point is Don Norman's three teapots. Remember those? He talks about that unusable coffee pot for masochists, then the really charming Nana teapot by Michael Graves, and also that clever Ronnefeldt tilting pot.
Right, yeah. And what's fascinating there is how these teapots, they perfectly illustrate three distinct layers of emotional design. First, you've got visceral design. That's all about the pure, immediate appearance, that gut feeling, like the look of the Nana teapot. It's just delightful.
That immediate reaction.
Exactly. Then there's behavioral design. That focuses on the pleasure and, the effectiveness of actually using it. Think about the sheer practicality of that tilting pot.
Makes sense how easy it is to use.
And finally, there's reflective design. This connects more to the story, the pride, maybe the personal meaning a product holds. Even theoretically, for that impossible masochist pot, if it somehow meant something really unique to its owner.
Okay, so we've got these layers, but here's where it gets really interesting, I think. Norman's own thinking, it shifted, didn't it? He started out focused purely on usability, but then he had this big realization about emotion. What was that that pivotal shift?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He initially prioritized pure function. How well does it work? But as new scientific understanding of the brain emerged, he realized emotions are just inseparable from how we think and make decisions, completely intertwined.
Wow.
And this wasn't just like a philosophical idea. He actually discovered that aesthetically pleasing objects, things we find beautiful, they actually work better.
That's kind of mind-blowing. Objects we find pretty don't just feel good, they often perform better too. Like, think about that Mini Cooper example. People love it, right? Despite its quirks.
Exactly.
So it's not just charm, it's this deep insight that positive emotions can genuinely boost cognitive function and how well you do tasks. You know, I had this old, really quirky blender once, super loud, sometimes messy, but it made the best smoothies.
Right.
And it did this funny little wobble.
Oh, yeah. Character.
Had character,
Yeah.
exactly. I loved that thing. Flaws and all. So it really does often come down to those feelings, doesn't it?
It really does. And that connection between emotion and performance
Yeah.
is so critical because, well, think about those studies on brain injury patients who suddenly couldn't make choices.
Right. I remember reading about that.
It shows that if emotions profoundly influence decision making, then designing for emotion isn't just some, nice to have extra. It's actually fundamental to how you engage with the world, even subconsciously.
Okay, so building on that foundation, experts like Jay Yoon and Peter Desmet, they push us to go beyond just like general pleasure. They talk about the importance of nuanced positive emotions, something they call emotional granularity. Imagine experiencing what, at least 25 distinct positive emotions from products, things like pride, fascination, even relief. That's a huge spectrum.
It is. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it's really about fostering your long-term well-being. Designing for a whole diversity of positive emotions can help fight hedonic adaptation. You know that
Oh,
feeling?
yeah, when something new and exciting just becomes normal, mundane.
Exactly. Like that brand new smartphone just becoming your phone after a week. The initial joy fades. So this is about prioritizing the doing and being with a product, not just the having it. But there's a nuance here, too.
Okay.
This pursuit of positive emotion, it needs consideration. Even something seemingly positive, like, say, optimism, if it's totally ungrounded or unchecked by careful thought, well, it could lead to blind spots or maybe irresponsible choices.
Ah, I see. So we're talking about wise emotional design, not just chasing any positive feeling.
Precisely. Thoughtful, ethical design.
That's a really important point. So, given everything we've talked about, how deeply emotions shape our experience, where does design go next? What's the next frontier beyond just pleasure or efficiency?
Well, that's where this idea of liminal design comes into the conversation. It's a framework that aims for experiences that really stretch beyond just pleasure, maybe even seeking personal transformation.
A liminal design. Okay,
Right.
transformation. How does that work?
Liminality, At its core, it's about creating these kind of ambiguous in-between spaces, places that gently challenge your everyday assumptions. They allow you to safely explore new narratives, new ways of thinking about yourself and the world. And it generally works through a three-step process.
A three-step process to transformation. Okay, tell us more.
So first, it defines a clear narrative desire that basically gives you a compelling personal why. Why should you engage with this?
Got it. The motivation.
Second, it creates an optimized abstraction.
Okay, optimized abstraction. That sounds a little academic. Can you break that down simply for us?
Yeah, fair enough. It really just means creating a space, could be physical, could be digital, where everything that doesn't contribute to that specific desired emotional outcome is carefully removed.
Okay.
Think of it like turning off all your notifications when you really need deep focus. You're abstracting away the distractions.
Makes sense. Clearing the clutter.
Exactly. And finally, liminal design promotes suspension of disbelief. This means crafting a dedicated space, maybe even a ritual, that helps you immerse yourself fully. It allows room for your own interpretation, your own meaning-making. Think of maybe a video conferencing booth that's specifically designed for really deep, intimate conversations, cutting out all the usual office noise, or that dark dining experience where removing sight dramatically amplifies your sense of taste.
Wow. Okay. So this deep dive really shows us that design isn't just about simple function or, you know, immediate satisfaction anymore. It's about intentionally shaping our emotional landscape, maybe even creating opportunities for some profound personal transformation.
It really makes you think, doesn't it, about how every single object and interaction in your life, from your, I don't know, your morning teacup to the digital spaces you inhabit, how they could be designed differently, designed to unlock deeper meaning, perhaps even foster a greater sense of well-being.
So thinking about that, what kind of liminal spaces might you seek out or maybe even try to create in your own life to truly transform an everyday experience, something to ponder?